relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
I'm Seb Gorka. Now let's get back to the show with Bob France.
Yeah, let's do exactly that. It is 20 minutes past the hour. I'm live in Cleveland, Ohio. My home base is AM 1420, The Answer. I'm looking at my phone right now because I just got a text message from Seb, which is absolutely amazing. And you talk about patriots, you talk about some of the best men among us. Tom Homan is one of them. Seb is at Mar-a-Lago right now with President Trump and for this Border 911 gala honoring Tom Homan. Tom Homan, the former ICE director under President Trump, is there, and as is the entire Border 911 team. This is a tremendous event. It's Tom's Border 9. Now, is it 911 or is it 911? Because there's no slash. I'm thinking it's 911 as in emergency, not 911 as in September 11th. But either way, he is down there. He's emceeing this tremendous event, this unveiling of Tom Homan's 911 border organization and event. And I'll tell you what, it looks amazing. It looks amazing. Congratulations to Dr. G for being down there with the boss and with Tom Homan, who really is one of the best among us. And I hope he has such a prominent role in the next Trump administration. We know he will. The question is what are we talking about? Homeland Security Secretary, maybe? Not exactly sure, but I love that. So Dr. G is in Mar-a-Lago, and we are live on America First. Thanks for being with us. Let's bring in Matt Boyle now. Matt Boyle is, of course, the Washington Bureau Chief of Breitbart News. He'll join us now on America First. Hey, Matt, how are you?
Doing well. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thank you. I appreciate you coming. I'll tell you what, just real quick. You know, I'm watching and listening and fuming every single day when I hear Team Biden, whether it be Joe himself or the diversity hire press secretary, or whether it be Blinken or whether it be Kirby or any of them talking about the, 10 million people or so that have crossed the southern borders under Biden's watch. And they keep blaming. They keep blaming that bipartisan bill that came from the Senate that did not get a vote in the House and saying that's what failed to secure this, secure the border. So all of the crossings that you guys are complaining about, you Republicans are complaining about, they're on Republican hands. I am getting so tired of that because you know and I know, so does Tom Homan down there, so does Sebastian Gorka, so does President Trump, that Joe Biden did not need any congressional actions to open the border, and he needs no congressional actions to reclose the border, does he?
No, and by the way, it's one of the biggest lies that he's told this year, and there are plenty of whoppers, but the fact is that that Senate bill would not have done anything to make the better. In fact, I talked to President Trump about this a few weeks ago when I was with him at Mar-a-Lago, and he says it would have exacerbated the problem. President Trump is exactly right. It would have codified into law the entry of more than 5,000, I think it is 7,500 a day, migrants being brought into the country through this pipeline. So it would have actually made the problem a lot worse that we've seen under the Biden administration. The fact is that that bill, it didn't even pass the Senate. Like, I mean, they couldn't even get it up through a Senate filibuster. So it was a total nonsensical bill. It was just designed by the Democrats to be able to create this talking point to try to distract voters. I think the American public is too smart, and I think that they understand that this is a total lie and that bill would not have done anything to make the problem
I hope
better.
They do, Matt. You're a little more optimistic than I do because the media is very, very good at lying. And you just said it's the biggest lie they're telling. It is also the most repeated. And, I mean, every time the border comes up, they use it. They use it in pressers. They use it to interview in interviews. They use it in comment on MS Comments on MSNBC and their networks. They use it online. And here's the thing. This really got to me, Matt, and there's a reason I'm bringing it up right now because of the Tom Homan thing going on down there at Mar-a-Lago. But I just saw yesterday, or maybe it was Tuesday, the numbers for March came in. 140,000 crossings in March, which puts, by the way, in the fiscal year that started in October, 6 months, over 1 million crossings, the third straight year of over 1 million in the Biden regime. And in March, it was 140,000. And when that was brought up to the Biden regime, their response was, well, don't blame us. The Republicans wouldn't pass the border bill, the bipartisan border bill. And what I want people to know is, even if that bill had passed, that 140,000 wouldn't have done anything because it would have taken another 10,000 for it to kick in. Because they said that what that bill, and you know this, and I want everybody else to know this, what that bill said is that it would allow up to 5,000 border crossings a day. And in a 30-day month, that's 150,000. So there were 140,000 that crossed in March. And so nothing in that bill would have been even activated unless another 10,000 had come. So that's the absurdity of this lie that the bipartisan border bill would have done something to control the border. It would have absolutely done nothing.
Right. It was a total sham piece of legislation. Everybody knows that. And frankly, all you have to do is look at the numbers that we saw at the end of the Trump administration once Trump's policies had kicked in, right? Like, which were, it was down to a crawl, right? Like, or nothing, basically. I mean, there was a handful of people. I mean, look at the
best in 45 years.
Best in 45 years. And I think President Trump actually tweeted out or truthed out a graphic that laid that out, the numbers, at the end of his administration. And look, Biden took more than 60 executive actions. We've done stories about this at Breitbart. People can go read them. The 64 executive actions, I believe.
Pardon me for correcting you if I'm wrong. I apologize. But I thought that number was 94. 94 different executive actions.
Senator Blackburn might have found more. That's the thing. And so whatever the number is, 60-something or 90-something, the point is the same. All Biden has to do is undo those executive actions, and that number will come down significantly, right? Like the number of people crossing the border every month. And by the way, it's going to get worse as the weather gets warmer, right? Like what ends up happening is people start moving up. So the spring and summer tend to be way worse than the winter months. And so as we turn to the spring and summer now, that number is going to continue to climb every month. So, no, but it's a total lie from the Biden administration, total lie from the White House, total lie from the president. And that's why you see, and I think that people see it. That's what President Trump did that event with law enforcement officers in Michigan the other day. And I think that the reason why he's leading in the polls in the battleground states across the country, and the reason why he is leading the national polls as well, is because I think the American public sees this, and they want to see actual action on immigration. They could give a darn about the rhetoric used by this person or that person. I see everybody zoning in on Trump using migrant crime as a phrase. But who cares?
Well, animal is
right?
The
like,
big
it doesn't
one
matter
now.
What you call it.
Yeah.
But animal, yeah. So, by the way, somebody who kills a young girl is an animal. Thank you, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, who cares?
Especially how he did it. He caved in her skull. And I hate to be graphic, and I apologize for the imagery that conjures up. But, Matt, he collapsed her skull was the description that they used. Anybody who does that is an animal. And the left is freaking out as if he called every illegal border crosser an animal. He didn't. He called that person an animal, and anybody like him who does that is an animal.
And if we enforced our immigration laws, guess what? He wouldn't have been here to do it.
Amen. Exactly. It's the latest hoax.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
It's just like the, you know, bloodbath hoax. It's just like everything else that he says hoax. Matt Boyle is our guest from Breitbart, Washington Bureau Chief. He's going to stick with us one more segment. Stay here. I'm Bob Franson for Dr. G.
Greetings, this is Dr. Sebastian Gorka from the Midas Gold Group War Room. The MAGA veterans at Midas point out that the Federal Reserve note does not belong to you. It belongs to the Federal Reserve Bank. While the federal debt doesn't belong to the Federal Reserve Bank, it belongs to you. This is your wake-up call to what the Midas Gold Group veterans believe the central bank and government are trying to do. A controlled demolition of our current system with a central bank digital currency to take complete and utter control of our transactional freedoms. A literal digital concentration camp replete with social sanctions. Protect yourself. Turn this wake-up call into a phone call and look into the opportunities that gold can provide you as a way to diversify your investments. Call veteran-owned Midas Gold Group today, 855-322-GOLD, or go to MidasGoldGroup.com. That's 855-322-GOLD, or just go to MidasGoldGroup.com. Always faithful, Midas Gold Group, MAGA, and proud of it.
President Biden spoke a short while ago with Prime Minister Netanyahu. The leaders discussed the situation in Gaza. The president emphasized that the strikes on humanitarian workers and the overall humanitarian situation are unacceptable. He made clear the need for Israel to announce a series of specific, concrete, and measurable steps to address civilian harm, humanitarian suffering, and the safety of aid workers. He made clear that U.S. policy with respect to Gaza will be determined by our assessment of Israel's immediate action on these steps. He underscored as well that an immediate ceasefire is essential to stabilize and improve the humanitarian situation and protect innocent civilians, and he urged Prime Minister Netanyahu to empower his negotiators to conclude a deal without delay to bring the hostages home. The two leaders also discussed public Iranian threats against Israel and the Israeli people. President Biden reaffirmed the United States' strong support for Israel in the face of these threats and our commitment to Israel's security. Right now, there is no higher priority in Gaza than protecting civilians, surging humanitarian assistance, and ensuring the security of those who provide it. Israel must meet this moment.
Israel must meet the moment. It's all up to Israel, says the Biden regime. It's all up to them to make sure that nobody gets hurt as they continue to try to defend themselves against Hamas. Welcome back. I'm Bob Franson for Dr. G. That was Tony Blinken just about an hour ago, a little bit less than an hour ago, the Secretary of State talking about Biden's conversation with Bibi Netanyahu over the next steps in the battle in Gaza. And we're joined once again by Matt Boyle, Washington Bureau Chief of Breitbart. Matt, your response to what you just heard from Antony Blinken?
Everything this White House does, that Biden does, that Blinken does, anybody in this administration, all of it is all about Dearborn, Michigan. All right, it's all about Muslim voters in this uncommitted streak that we're seeing. It's no surprise to me that this phone call happened right after more than double the margin of the 2020 election in Wisconsin just 2 days ago voted uncommitted, or whatever the term is in Wisconsin. It's different in different states. Right. Against Joe Biden in the Democrat primary, 47,000 Democrats. These are oftentimes Muslims, but also people on the hard left, et cetera. Literally, for a race that's already decided, drove their behinds to the polls or voted by mail or went out of their way in their life for a race that's already decided. Joe Biden's already the presumptive nominee of the Democrat Party. He has the delegates to vote against him. This is a major problem for them. They have major problems going into this election. I don't think that this will – I know that what they're trying to do is win those people back. I don't think there's anything they can do to win those people back. I think that some of them are considering voting for Trump, which is pretty amazing. But also many of them are either just not going to vote or they're going to vote third party. And this is a major problem. This could be the entire election right here. That is what they are focused on. That is solely what they are focused on. And they don't give a darn about Israel or they've already forgotten what happened on 10/7. They don't care about world security. They don't care about public safety. They don't care about anything. They only care about winning the election. That is the only thing they are focused on. That is what this is all about.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, Matt. I've been making the same statement on my radio show every single day because this is what it's about for them. He doesn't care about Israeli Jews. He doesn't care about Muslims. He doesn't care about Palestinian civilians in Gaza. He cares about the angry Arab American vote, the angry Muslim American vote that he's being too nice to Israel by essentially, allowing them to continue to exist. And the reality of this is what really gets me, though, is this statement that there are these, you know, this massive population of Gazan civilians who are innocent. You probably, Matt, saw the same surveys that I did of adults in Gaza. They did it back in December, and now they've done another one to see if there's any change. There's no change. 74% of Gazans say they support Hamas, the terrorist organization. And moreover, 95% of them say Israel has committed war crimes. Only 5% of them say Hamas has committed war crimes. How are these innocent civilians? They support Hamas and everything that Hamas has done to the Israeli Jews.
Again, the fact of the matter is that, by the way, they had a quote-unquote election, right? Like, where Hamas won, right? Like, so the fact is that, yeah, no. I mean, but again, everything they are doing is all about votes. It's all about power. It's all about remaining in control. These people, and look, they're at serious risk right now. Like, I think it's a very serious problem for them. I think that Arab voters are going to go elsewhere in this upcoming election. It's going to be a major problem for them.
Or they're not going to go anywhere. They're going to stay home. Either way, it costs Biden, and you're exactly right. That's all they're worried about. Matt Boyle from Breitbart, Washington Bureau Chief. Great stuff, my friend. Thank you for joining us here on America First. We'll be back.
Did you know that 84% of New Year's resolutions fail in the first 6 weeks? That's got me thinking about PhD weight loss and nutrition and why it was a success for me. Why I haven't gained 1 pound of my 42-pound weight loss back. Why Jeff, my producer, decided to start the program. Most people blame their failure on a lack of time, motivation, and a loss of zeal. PhD makes it simple. It doesn't take a lot of extra time. They are masters of motivation. You have a team of coaches by your side the whole time, and you don't lose your zeal because every week you make great strides, so you stay excited. Do something different this year and call PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition, 864-644-1900. To get started or online at myphdweightloss.com. Don't do this alone. The number 864-644-1900. myphdweightloss.com. I'm Seb Gorka. Now let's get back to the show with Bob France.
20 minutes after the hour, Bob France indeed in for Dr. G live in Cleveland, Ohio. Don't forget to check me out online at France Rants on Twitter. Give me a follow there. Give me a follow on Facebook at Always Right Radio. And don't forget to listen to the show. You can always listen online at WHKRadio.com. One of my good friends, all the way out, I still don't know why in the hell he still lives in the fetid state of California, but that's where he practices law. He also writes as a senior columnist for townhall.com. He is Colonel Kurt Schlichter. Colonel Kurt, welcome back. How are you, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing great.
When are you going to flee?
I already have a house in Texas. How many houses do I have to buy?
Did you keep the one in California, though?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
I'm not in it now because it flooded out, and I'm in alternative living arrangements.
But you're paying tax dollars to Gavin Newsom, brother. That's what I can't quite figure out.
Look, California was designed to enrich lawyers. Okay, I am a class traitor. I am exactly who Gavin Newsom and his band of corrupt moronic cronies want to enrich. So it's like, I mean, I'm collateral damage, I guess, to them, because they, you know, they do everything they can to make me prosperous. And if dumb people are going to do dumb things, I'm perfectly happy to take dumb money.
Take their money. Yeah, I'm with you, my friend. I got you. I just like to poke fun at some of the Californians who have been left behind. So many have left and come to Texas. They're going to Tennessee.
No,
they're going
all over the country. Most of the activists are gone. We used to have a vibrant community back when Andrew Breitbart was here, and that's yeah, largely gone. But, you know, I'm constantly meeting people who turn out to be conservative. You kind of figure out that they share your views, and then it's okay. But in absolute numbers, because, you know, remember, most leftists are too dumb to understand per capita. You know, even if 25% of California is conservative, that's like 9 million conservatives. That's a lot of conservatives in absolute numbers.
Yeah, it's a good point. And you know, I give you credit too, because you're courageous, because you stay there and you try to grow that number and you try to do what you can as an activist to, you know, through that number. But boy, it must be just hard. It's just hard. I know it is, to feel like you don't have any power. You're going to cast your votes for the right people. You're going to vote for Steve Garvey for senator over Adam Schiff, but you know you're going to be overwhelmed by the radicals who are going to vote for the pencil next. So that's the only thing.
Yeah.
So I give you credit for being willing to stick it out. So let's talk. Let's talk about Transgender Day of Visibility. Your latest article for townhall.com, Kurt Schlichter, used their calculated insults against them. Who are we talking about here?
Well, look, I'm perfectly willing to think that Joe Biden's so stupid that he wouldn't realize Sunday was Easter when he signed this mentally ill day of visibility thing. No, I mean, it was a calculated insult. And then they're like, I don't understand why you're so upset about it. Oh, do you think it was a bad thing? Well, no, it's a good thing. You know, it's one of those, we're not doing that, but if we were, it'd be a good thing.
You know? Calculated by who? Colonel Kurt, calculated by Biden or by his people? You probably
the whole crew of ruling class leftists hates us. And, you know, a lot of them are just enjoy tormenting normal people. They get off on it. That's part of the fun of communism, was always sticking it to people who aren't mental defectives, losers, scumbags, you know, the typical things that communists are. The thing is, for us, you know, people who are aware, people who are based, you know, we know they hate us. The normal people who don't participate in politics, they're the ones that our reaction needs to be directed to. We're not going to convince the leftists that they're bad and they should stop doing this stuff. They can't. They can only be defeated. No, we have to convince normal people about the reality of this horrible situation. And things like designating the most holy day in Christianity as this day for ridiculous perverts and psychos is the kind of thing where normal people go, you know, that's just not right. So it's a wake-up call to them, and that's how we have to use it. But for us to actually get upset about it, you might as well get upset about a great white shark, you know, eating a seal. That's just what they do. You have to use it against them. And I think we've pretty effectively done that.
Do you think, Colonel Kurt, that Biden knew what he had signed, that it was a proclamation declaring the Trans Visibility Day or whatever on Easter? Because he sounded almost believable when he said, I did not do that. I wonder if people who are pulling his strings slide things underneath his pen inside of his shaky right hand, and he scribbles something down and say, just scribble here, sir. I just wonder if he even knew.
Oh, I don't even think it
crossed his desk. Speaker Johnson said he doesn't think he knew.
Oh, I have no doubt that it was could be put out without his approval. I think he would have approved it had he been conscious. But he's a desiccated old perverted zombie, so he doesn't know anything.
Yeah, I think it could be
either way. I think it's irrelevant at the end. I did like how he lied about it. Oh, I never did anything like that. And the regime media is like, no, they didn't do anything like that. And also, they did do something like that, and it was a good thing.
Yeah, and that's the best part about it.
It's one of those, are you lying or do you just think we're stupid? I mean, are you stupid or do you think we're stupid? I mean, which is it? Because somebody's stupid.
Yeah, well, they really do. They think we're stupid enough to fall for that. What I don't get, though, Kurt, is just in general, and I'm sorry, and I'm truly not trying to be crass about this, but why in the world is this the only one of the listed, you know, psychological disorders that the sufferer is told, be proud of that, go flex that, be more of that,
yeah,
go recruit more people? Because they don't say that to manic depressives. They don't say that to bipolar disorder sufferers. They don't say that to multiple personality disorder sufferers. They say, let's treat that, let's work on that. But with these people, they say, go team.
The purpose of trans is to transgress. Okay, they don't care about these people. I mean, there have always been people with mental illness, and there have always been people who are perverts. That's the two groups that make up the trans thing. Some are just outright perverts. Some are just sick individuals who could use our help and our pity. But they are useful because they're so alien and so weird that there's actually a value for the leftists to affirm it, because that's a huge show of proof. You are sacrificing your own dignity and your own honor and your own honesty to affirm something you know is false. But it is also powerful because they can leverage it to force other people to affirm something that everyone knows is untrue, false, and evil. And that's a classic totalitarian technique. If you can make people lie, especially if everyone knows they're lying, well, that's a huge way to take power over.
Colonel Kurt Schlichter is our guest. Kurt, let's stick around, do another segment. You are one of the most unapologetic supporters of Israel on all of social media. Let's talk about what happened today when we continue on America First.
Mike Lindell has a passion to help you get the best sleep of your life. After he invented the world's best pillow, he created the famous Giza Dream Sheets. They are the best sheets you will ever sleep on. For a limited time, you'll get a queen-size set for $59.98, king-size for $69.98, the lowest prices in history. Mike and the My Pillow Company continue to be canceled by big box stores and attacked by the media. They appreciate all of your great support during these times and want to thank you by giving you the best specials on all their products. To get those specials, go to MyPillow.com or call 800-829-8468, promo code G-O-R-K-A. You get the famous Giza Dream Sheets, queen size $59.98 and king size for $69.98. You'll also get 60% off the original My Slippers. So call 800-829-8468 or go to MyPillow.com. Promo code G-O-R-K-A. All around me are familiar faces, worn out places, worn out faces. I'm Seb Gorka. Now let's get back to the show with Bob France.
Now that is a strong song choice. Well done, whoever is spinning the tunes over there. Is that Alex? Great job if it is. 33 minutes past the hour. Bob France sitting in for Dr. Gorka on America First, joined by Colonel Kurt Schlichter, senior columnist at townhall.com and California lawyer extraordinaire. So, Kurt, I wanted to ask you about Gaza, and I'll do that very briefly here, because you are one of the most unapologetic supporters of Israel, and not just supporting Israel, but essentially saying, go get Hamas. I'm tired of hearing about how we have to, Israel has to, be more concerned about collateral damage and about the innocent Palestinian civilians and so forth, and they should be proportional in their response. You don't give a flying rip about any of them, and you say, go get them, Bibi Netanyahu. You saw Tony Blinken today, after Biden talked to Netanyahu, saying that America's policy toward Israel is going to be determined by whether or not they do agree to this ceasefire that they want right now, and whether they do not go into Rafah and continue the pursuit of the terrorists who conspired against Israel and carried out that attack on 10/7.
Well, I think it's disgusting that the Democrats are now sacrificing our ally Israel for a few votes in Michigan. Israel should tell Joe Biden to go pound sand, and then they should go pound Hamas. This idea that somehow Israel has a moral obligation to be defeated is stupid and morally illiterate. Israel has no moral obligation to care more about Palestinians or Palestinian adjuncts or people hanging around the Palestinians than the Palestinians themselves do. Israel, this problem gets solved by Israel going into Rafah, destroying Hamas, and winning this war. And frankly, I think Israel has held back too much. If I was the commander in chief, this would be over decisively. Already.
I feel the same way. No.
And if it was American forces under my command, for 10 generations, Palestinian moms would scare their children by telling them that the Americans are coming if they don't behave. Wow. You go and rape and murder my fellow citizens, you're all going to die. I mean, this isn't some new revolutionary idea. This is how you deal with savages. The idea that somehow we've evolved out of this is exactly the opposite of the truth. This empowers people to go on mass murder sprees, which they will do in the United States. I have a book on that called The Attack. They are going to do it here. This invites that as much as opening the border invites it. I mean, this is Bob Gates said Joe Biden has been wrong on every foreign policy question in the last 50 years. The only good thing I'll ever say about Joe Biden is he is remarkably consistent because he is absolutely wrong about this. Israel should ignore the United States and wipe out Hamas. And frankly, I think Israel has mishandled this from the beginning. On October 8th, it should have invaded Lebanon and annihilated Hezbollah and made Gaza a secondary front. I would have written off the hostages day one and just said, well, they're all dead. And in fact, I think most of the ones I think are being held now are, in fact,
dead. Beat me to the question. I was going to ask you if you think they left any of them.
Yeah, they're all dead
anyway.
Yeah, but I would treat them as if they were dead. I would, if it was me, Hamas would be on its knees begging me to take the survivors back and stop. And I might, or I might not.
I would follow you with that policy, Colonel Kurt, and I would follow you into battle, too, because I completely agree with you. This is not – war is supposed to be a zero-sum game, and what was done to them on 10/7 should leave – there should be no doubt whatsoever what they are able to do to protect against an October 8th, an October 9th, and an October 1000th, which Hamas has promised. Kurt, I've only got a minute and a half here. Briefly, summarize, the race hustlers are terrified that Trump will end racism. Your latest column for Town Hall.
Yeah, we have a real problem with one of the great achievements of America is the largest ethnic group did not identify as an ethnic group. It identified as a nation, and it invited other people of other ethnic groups to be part of it, e pluribus unum, out of many one. And this is a remarkable achievement, which by this focus on whiteness, which is an idiotic term, they are basically creating an ethnic group out of the majority where before it wasn't an ethnic group. And by oppressing it economically, academically, criminally, they are going to radicalize it. that's not a moral judgment.
You're going to have people read your column, Colonel Kurt, because we're out of time here. Follow Colonel Kurt on Twitter, at Kurt Schlichter. Read his latest at Town Hall. I'm Bob Franson for Dr. G. We'll be back.
I'm Seb Gorka. Now let's get back to the show with Bob France.
All right, thanks very much, Dr. G. It's 20 minutes after the hour now. Hey, we got a few things to talk about here. The globalists have made it clear that another pandemic could be just around the corner. We just talked about this, and they want us to live in fear and sacrifice our freedoms. My advice, Dr. G's advice, our America First advice, be prepared, not scared. That's why you need the Wellness Company. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals you can trust. Their medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy. They contain an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak, as well as a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all of these life-saving medications. You will have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics on hand instead of waiting in fear, dependent on Big Pharma and their propagandists in the government. Go to TWC.health/Gorka. That's TWC, that stands for the Wellness Company. TWC.health/Gorka, and enter the code Gorka for 10% off. The Wellness Company and their licensed doctors are medical professionals you can trust. It's TWC.health/Gorka. That's TWC.health/Gorka. Promo code Gorka. See the site for details. Prescription may be required. Portions of America First are brought to you in part by the Wellness Company. So I want to dive into something a little bit different here on America First, and thanks for being with us. Up in South Dakota, Kristi Noem has become one of the most popular conservative politicians, I think, in the country. She is the governor. She is very highly rated, and she is considered to be on the short list of potential candidates for vice president to serve with President Trump. She just made her way to my state, to Ohio, about 2 weeks ago to help campaign for Bernie Moreno as a Senate candidate as we try to take the Senate back from the demon rats. And so she is, again, very well regarded. But in her home state, she's got some enemies. And apparently these enemies are on the tribal councils, the tribal leaders in some of these South Dakota tribes. Joining us now to tell us what is going on is Austin Goss. He is a reporter slash correspondent with the Dakota Scout, and he's been covering the story for their publication and their Substack. And he joins us now on America First. Austin, good to have you, man. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks so much for having me on, Bob.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. So here's the thumbnail sketch version from what I have been told. That there are some corrupt tribal leaders that are allowing some of their land to be used for some pretty nefarious things, including drug cartels delivering product and operating out of there, and that Governor Noem has become aware of it and is trying to put a stop to it, and that Governor Noem has made that clear, and she has been hit with a lot of pushback from them. And I'm trying to figure out if there is a political aspect to this or if this is a simple law and order case that the governor is concerned about on these tribal lands, which, of course, are federally protected. What can you tell us, Austin?
Yeah, you know, I think, Bob, to kind of get into it, you have to understand the history of the governor's relationship with the tribes. You know, you go back to COVID in 2020. Obviously, the governor was one of the few in the country, if not the only in the country, to not shut her state down, largely in response to the COVID-19 lockdown. And the tribes,
she got so popular. Yeah, correct.
And so the tribes, what they ended up doing, you might remember this, it was national news for a while. They implemented their own checkpoints for people trying to come onto the reservations, which, of course, caused problems for travel. Just people who didn't live on the reservations. And of course, those who did, they implemented checkpoints. And it turned into this whole thing where the governor essentially threatened to shut down those checkpoints. There was talk at one point of bringing the National Guard. So there's a bit of a history on this issue. But, you know, it's important to understand that in the broader context. But here more recently, in January, the governor delivered a joint address to the state legislature here and said that there are drug cartels operating on these reservations, which is a fact that's been substantiated by the FBI, by the DEA. You know, last month, NBC National did a story about the cartel's presence on reservations in Montana. Of course, we would think that the same would hold for South Dakota. That's been substantiated by our Department of Criminal Investigations here in South Dakota, the Department of Public Safety here in South Dakota. And a few of them did take offense to that. You know, I think there was some surprise about those remarks, just because they didn't have a heads up or something to that effect was the point made. And the governor has since doubled down on that. She last month at a town hall in Winter, South Dakota, Southern South Dakota, made a comment that some of these tribal council members were personally benefiting from the cartel's presence. And a lot of them didn't respond very well to that. And that's how she ended up getting banned from Cheyenne River this week, which Cheyenne River is one of the larger ones, I believe. It's up in Northern South Dakota. For your viewers who are familiar with the Dakotas, it's almost closer to Bismarck than it is like Sioux Falls or Rapid City, Bismarck, North Dakota.
So is there any evidence of this, of the tribal leaders being, you know, benefiting from these cartels? You know, it's funny. I think about, there's an old movie, not that old, sometime in the teens, called Savages, in which it was about drugs and drug cartels and so on and so forth. And one of the places they always came when they came from Mexico into the United States was into the tribal lands, because they couldn't be touched by federal authorities because of, you know, sovereign land, essentially. So are drug cartels in real life using those tribal lands to get here and distribute product and push that stuff all out around the country? Is there evidence of that, or is it just allegations right now?
No, I think there's substantial evidence of that. And, you know, obviously it's at very much to the disadvantage of these people who live on these reservations. There's a lot of great, hardworking people who live on reservations who just want to make ends meet. There's kids that live on these reservations who it's negatively impacting, and it's causing crime. It's causing problems. And again, this has been documented by the FBI. It's been documented by the DEA, I mean, the feds. As far as you can see in here in South Dakota, it's been substantiated by state officials. So there's almost no question in my mind, and I don't think in anybody's mind when we're having an honest conversation, that there is a problem insofar as cartels operating off the reservations. The extent to which, you know, it still remains unknown, because it is such a broad landscape. You think about these reservations, they're the responsibility of the federal authorities, to enforce the law there. And in a lot of times, they don't have the adequate law enforcement resources to do that. And a number of tribes will not sign memorandums of understanding with state law enforcement officials, which effectively would just mean that state troopers could go onto their lands and help, you know, enforce laws there. They won't sign these understanding agreements. And so it largely remains this kind of gray area where, you know, the tribe ultimately has sovereignty. It's almost like its own separate country, but they get a lot of resources for federal law enforcement from Washington. They're not getting adequate resources for that. They don't want the state's help. And so if you're looking at it from a cartel's perspective, if you will, I mean, why wouldn't you want to go to the reservations? They're right here dead smack in the middle of America. It makes a lot of sense, frankly, and it's to the disadvantage of, you know, all Americans, and certainly those on the tribes more than anyone else. They're the ones who have to deal with this the most, and it's very unfortunate.
So, Austin, so we're talking with Austin Goss. He is a correspondent with the Dakota Scout in South Dakota. And so the biggest name here, of course, belongs to Kristi Noem, the governor, and she is very popular. And as I said, she's considered to be on the short list to be potentially considered as a vice president for President Trump on that ticket. So I'm reading comments about this story, Austin, and some who are opponents and who don't like Trump and don't like Kristi Noem say she's grandstanding here and she's trying to make a bigger name for herself and try to inject herself so that she could pump up her creds, you know, her bona fides, if you will, to be the vice president. Others are saying no, they're attacking her. She is actually just trying to do her job as a governor. And she's worried about the drugs and the impact on South Dakotans, and they're attacking her because of her popularity. So do you see it as one or the other?
You know, I think it's disingenuous to say that the governor is doing this, I mean, for only political reasons. I heard this one time with Trump, and I think it stands for this as well, to take her very seriously, but not literally all the time. But in my conversations with Governor Noem, I think that you could tell that she genuinely cares about this. And I mean, how could you not? Again, there are people who have to live this life. I mean, the reservations, I think our five reservations or five of the counties that they're at are poorest in the country. They live in abject poverty.
Austin, let me pause you there. I've got a hard break coming here, but I want to hear more about your thoughts, especially since you said you've had many conversations with Governor Noem, and she's a big player in this whole thing. So we'll talk more with you as we continue right here on America First.
Hey, sister, what have you done?
I'm Seb Gorka. Now let's get back to the show with Bob France.
All right, Dr. G, thank you. It's 33 minutes past the hour. That leaves 27 minutes left within it. And we do continue. Don't forget, follow me on Twitter at France Rants. And don't forget to check out Strictly Speaking, if you would. Go to Watch True Blue with no E's, TRUBLU, watchtrueblue.com. Or you can just go to my social media pages, Always Right Radio on Facebook, always write WHK on Truth Social, and again, France Rants on Twitter, to find out where to find our TV show called Strictly Speaking. We're talking now with Austin Goss. He is a correspondent and journalist with the Dakota Scout in South Dakota. We're talking about Governor Kristi Noem, who is continues to be one of the more popular conservatives in America because of the way she handled COVID. Austin was exactly right. She and Ron DeSantis were two of the most outspoken opponents of lockdowns and trying to restore the freedom of businesses to open and so forth. And so she became a very popular person. And some say she could be Donald Trump's choice to be the vice president. Not sure when he's going to make that choice, but she could be. Well, she's embroiled now in a lot of controversy over drug cartels dealing and distributing drugs on some of the tribal land, some of the reservations in South Dakota. She's been banned from some of those reservations because she is calling for an audit. And let's pick it up there, Austin. Right before the break, I was asking you whether or not you believe that she is being attacked, as some are suggesting, because she might be Donald Trump's VP. And the other side, you know, are saying she's grandstanding right now because she does want to be the VP and she wants to stay in the news as much as she possibly can. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, Bob, I just in my talking to her and in my conversations, we actually just did an interview, about 30-minute interview last week, me and the governor, on largely on this topic. You know, we were talking beforehand about this issue, and you know, I can't speak to her feelings, but this is off camera and such. I get the impression that she does genuinely care about this. You know, this tribal conundrum, if you will, has been a problem in South Dakota for so long. They don't get the resources they need from the feds. There's not a lot of, there's a lot of questions about jurisdiction, what the state's role is enforcing the law there, what the locality, the reservation's role is in enforcing the law, the counties, the cities, and of course, the feds. And so I can tell, you know, as her second term here reaches its second half, if you will, that this is something that she does care about. And I think she would like to find an answer to. And I think she feels like when she called for that federal audit last week, or 2 weeks ago now, maybe, but she called for federal officials, including Attorney General Merrick Garland, to audit funds going to the reservations. I think she feels like that we may have hit a turning point in this moment in time. Like this might be the issue that finally wiggles something loose. And she got a lot of feedback from different constituents living on the reservation. Their Facebook page is dedicated to revealing tribal mismanagement of funds. So I think she feels like this is a turning point at this moment in time to really do something right on the reservation. I don't think she's politically grandstanding. I think it would be inappropriate to say that she's not a politician. She obviously is, and there's something to be gained from this, but I don't think that's why she's doing it.
Okay, and that's good. That's what I'm looking for is an idea here, because, again, I happen to be one of those who thinks she would be a really, really great candidate to be vice president. What's your feeling about her since you've had so many conversations with her? Do you get an idea of what her ambition is? I don't know what her status is. Is she term limited? How much longer does she have as governor? And where do you think she goes from there?
You know, Bob, it's interesting. I do think, like you said, it's no secret that she's in the running to become vice president. And I think what really gives her an interesting shot at it is the fact that she foregoed, in the past tense, a run for president herself. You'll recall back in probably 2021, she was considered maybe the most likely candidate to run in place of President Trump should he not run. And, you know, as I think as we both know, if you think about it from President Trump's perspective, he very much values loyalty. Governor Noem has been very loyal. She's endorsed with them. As you mentioned, she was at that rally with him in Ohio last week for Bernie Moreno, or 2 weeks ago. Yeah. I think in that respect, she would bring a lot to the ticket. I think she is probably angling for it to some extent. I mean, how could you not? I guess is what I would say. If that doesn't work out, I think what most likely happens for Governor Noem when her term comes to an end in 2026 is if she doesn't secure some kind of cabinet position or something, of course, if she's not vice president, she probably runs for Senate in South Dakota.
Yeah, that's what was going to be my next question. I don't exactly know what the Senate situation was in South Dakota, but I could see her doing something like that if she is not chosen as vice president. Would you? And I know you try to be a nonpartisan journalist, so you can answer this from through that lens. Do you think she would be an asset to a Trump ticket, or do you think he needs to look elsewhere? Just from a purely political observational standpoint.
You know, there's a lot of conversations about what she does or doesn't bring to the ticket. And it's interesting because a lot of people automatically defer to, well, she's from South Dakota. It wouldn't make any sense for him to pick her. Well, historically speaking, that doesn't matter. I mean, if you look at it from a small state perspective or from the fact that it's a very safe red state, I mean, Joe Biden picked Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris from California is obviously a very safe blue state. Mike Pence was from Indiana. It's a very safe red state. George Bush picked Dick Cheney. It's a very safe red state. I think in that regard, you know, it's silly to look at it that way. And I think what she brings to a ticket is a lot of loyalty. She's a woman, and she has a huge national profile. We're talking about her right now.
Yeah, identity politics. The left plays it all the time. It would not be a surprise if President Trump took advantage of that aspect, too. Thank you, Austin Goss. We appreciate it. We'll take a time out. I'm Bob France in for Dr. G. Let's take calls next, right here on America First.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.